This show is brought to you by Gobble by Kevin Carr, a Thanksgiving novelette of the zombie apocalypse, and you thought your family dinner was stressful. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today I'm going to be talking about In the Heart of the Sea, Legend, The Big Short, Don Verdeen, and catch up a little bit on some award films with By the Sea. I'm also going to be talking about the news, the trailer park, some box office predictions, and of course the home cinema roundup. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can reach me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And of course, if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, you can find me at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The Golden Globe nominations were announced this week, and as happens with every single award announcement, there's always a backlash of people saying this person was snubbed, that person was snubbed, this person didn't get it. There's a new thing that's going around that I never even heard this until this year. People talking category fraud, which is nonsense. We're going to be talking about the movie The Big Short in a couple minutes. That is about financial fraud that ruined people's lives. Category fraud is the most inane term for something that people get upset about that really doesn't impact the greater or anything. If you don't know what category fraud is, it's when something gets nominated in a category it really shouldn't be. Great example is in the Golden Globes, they have the best picture for drama and the best picture for musical and comedy. One of the movies that got nominated for musical or comedy was The Martian, along with The Big Short, Joy, Spy, and Trainwreck. Now, Spy and Trainwreck, totally, easily comedies. Joy is also kind of a comedy as well. I mean, it's not a uproarious comedy, but it's a comedy. The Big Short is a little bit dramatic, but it has very deliberate comedic elements to it. The Martian got nominated as well. That's not a comedy. But they knew that it stood no chance in the drama category, so they submitted it as a comedy. Fox did. Now, there's some funny parts to it. There's a lot of gags and one-liners that Matt Damon says throughout, but it's not a comedy. But the thing is, it's the Golden Globes, for crying out loud. No one has ever accused the Golden Globes of having oodles of integrity. They're just a bunch of foreign journalists who will nominate whatever they're wined and dined the most about. One of the things that sort of made a little bit of news is Mad Max Fury Road not only got nominated for Best Picture in the drama category, it was also nominated for Best Director, George Miller. And what's odd about the Golden Globes is they split Best Picture, but they have only one Best Director. I don't know why they do that. Again, this is not mortgages that people are putting their life savings on. This is a stupid award show. Now, there are people I know out there that are like, oh my God, it's so great. You know, Mad Max has a chance at the Oscars. Mad Max is not going to win Best Picture at the Golden Globes. It's not going to win Best Picture in the Oscars. I wouldn't be surprised if it gets nominated. There's up to 10 Oscar nominations that can come out. But the Golden Globes or the Oscars are not going to give the statuette for Best Picture to Mad Max Fury Road. So you can forget that right now. They will sometimes nominate stuff that it's popular because it will get them some news and get them some ink. So that's one of the things that noted people. One thing that's also interesting is Carol from the Weinsteins has been given a push for Cate Blanchett to be in the Best Actress nomination and Rooney Mara to be in the Best Supporting Actress nomination. And they kind of have equal amounts of screen time. If anything, Rooney Mara is more of the lead than Cate Blanchett is, but I guess her name's Carol and she's has a better shot at winning the Best Actress. Rooney Mara is going to have a harder uphill climb. And that's where people are yelling category fraud. Oh, it's not the right one. Now, the Golden Globes nominated them both for actress in drama. Neither of them is going to win because they're going to split the vote for the movie. That's exactly what the studios don't want to have happen. That's why they categorize this. And it's not fraud. It's just how they categorize it. And people get so up in arms about it. And people I know, I mean, people on the street don't care. The only other thing that I really kind of wanted to note was that Steve Jobs is getting these acting nominations. That's exactly why Universal pulled it from release a couple weeks ago, not because they thought it was a dud, but they want to now re-release it after Michael Fassbender and Kate Winslet are out there getting award nominations and potential awards. Then they can re-release it and get a little bit of traction and make a little bit more money and recoup some of their costs, and so it will no longer be just doing slightly better than that crappy Ashton Kutcher movie. Next piece of news. I called this one a while ago, and I mean, a lot of people did, and this was a news story 9 months ago. The Hunger Games isn't over. Lionsgate wants to keep making movies because they have no other massive franchise. They've got Divergent, which isn't really getting the traction, and The Hunger Games is over. It's the last movie. So they're talking about doing prequels, and they're actively pursuing these. It's the last Hunger Games movie did well enough that it did justify it. But the thing is that the numbers went down significantly, not just from the last movie to this, but from like Catching Fire to this final movie. It's still a big moneymaker, but not the huge windfall that they were getting. So they're going to be making some prequels, and these prequels are going to be about the Hunger Games and the that happened before Katniss got involved. But here's the problem. There's no Jennifer Lawrence involved in this. They're going to have to do some great casting to get somebody in those roles, because I don't think Jennifer Lawrence is going to want to have anything to do with the Hunger Games, because she went there, did that, and she's got other things she's doing. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. First one I want to hit is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows. It opens June 3rd, which is next summer.
What are you, superheroes?
Just four brothers who hate bullies and love this city.
I'm looking for Aaron Moyes. But we could work with that.
Me too.
Dude, bringing back the Mohawk. Good for you.
Oh, y'all got jokes, huh?
First thing I noticed about this is I didn't hate it. I was kind of surprised. I thought the first one was fine. The turtles were a bit creepy and Megan Fox is terrible. But I had a little bit of fun watching the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. One of the things that's kind of neat about this is they've brought back some of the characters from the original cartoon, Rocksteady and Bebop as the bad guys, this rhino and pig, mutated rhino and pig. And they look pretty great, actually. I guess they're supposed to look a little creepy. They don't look as, you know, simplistic as the drawings in the cartoons were. But, you know, I'm kind of looking forward to this. Megan Fox still can't act, even in this trailer. They minimize the line she has, which is what they did in the first movie. And I honestly don't think Megan Fox made this movie. The first movie did well in spite of Megan Fox. I'm waiting for somebody in Hollywood to say, oh, she led two Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles to fame, so let's give her own movie and have it just crash and burn. But the other thing that's kind of weird about this is, what the heck is Laura Linney doing in this movie? You're an Oscar nominated. You've been nominated 3 times for Oscars, and you're playing second fiddle to Megan Fox and some CGI turtles and a rat. The next trailer I want to talk about is The Legend of Tarzan, opens on July 1st, also next summer.
He is no normal man. He was thought to be an evil spirit, a ghost in the trees. No man ever started with less.
He's Tarzan. You're Jane. He'll come for you.
I also didn't hate this one. Now, it's been a while since I've read any of the Tarzan books, but I never felt that they captured it cinematically. They've done all, of course, the Johnny Weissmuller Tarzans, which are cheesy and corny, and in the 80s, they did Greystoke with Christopher Lambert, but they never quite got the right tone of Edgar Rice Burroughs' original books, because his books were this weird mixture of literary quality writing and pulp fiction. They're enjoyable books, but they're also just disposable fun. And this one actually looks like they get the story close to being right. They get the tone close to being right. And it's got Margot Robbie in it, and she's pretty much hot in anything she does. So I support it, even though her accent is always kind of odd. I can look past the accent when it comes to Margot Robbie. So I'm looking forward to both of these. I might actually have more fun next summer than I did this summer at the movies. Well, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be chasing the white whale in the heart of the sea and also talking about Don Verdeen. Take a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse. Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare. In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies, rolling into the film reviews, or sailing into the film reviews, actually. Let's talk about the first one that's hitting the screens, and that is In the Heart of the Sea. Ron Howard directs this film about the whaling disaster that inspired Herman Melville's Moby Dick.
You're married to whaleman.
Whaleman who loves you.
Promise me, just come back.
Promise.
What is it?
Hold on!
It's just a whale.
A couple things before I actually start talking about the movie. I have a confession to make. Moby Dick is my white whale. I started reading this book 25 years ago. And I got bogged down, and there's a lot of slow parts in Moby Dick, but I got bogged down pretty early, and I set it down, and I've tried to read it a couple times, and I love the writing. I have to say, I think it's some of the most vibrant, inspirational, and powerful writing I've read, but it's also like 1,000 pages long, and I always end up getting stuck, putting it down and never continuing, and then forgetting what happened and having to go back to the beginning. And even this past year, I took a cruise, and I thought, oh, this would be perfect, because I got one of those little recorded books that they have, those MP3. They're like the size of a credit card, and they have the entire unabridged book on it. And I got it before I went on my cruise from the library, and I drove from Ohio to Florida, and then was on this cruise, and then drove back, and I still didn't get done with the book. I mean, I don't even know if I got on the ocean. I remember sitting there looking out onto the open ocean from my balcony and realizing that they're not even in the ocean yet. But I kind of love the book, and one of these days I'll finish it. So that just reveals what a Luddite, stupid idiot I am. But I've always been kind of fascinated with Moby Dick. Now, the other thing about this movie is it stars Chris Hemsworth. And I actually realized this when I was watching Spotlight, because I said, here's a movie that features Batman and Howard Stark and the Incredible Hulk and Sabretooth. And I realized that the entirety of big name actors can now be boiled down to what role they played in either a superhero film. You can do it mostly with superhero films, but you can do any sort of big franchise. And in this movie, it has Chris Hemsworth, who is Thor. It has Tom Holland, who's the new Spider-Man. They're both on the boat. It's got Cillian Murphy, who was Scarecrow from Batman Begins. And then if you really want to expand to just series, you've got Ben Whishaw, who plays Herman Melville, and he's, of course, in the new James Bond movies as Q, and he's interviewing Brendan Gleeson as the older version of Tom Holland's character. And of course, he was in the Harry Potter movies as Mad-Eye Moody. So I just find it interesting that you see these essentially a serious epic films and serious what would be an award-contending kind of film. And they're all actors from big franchises. I just find it interesting you can framework the entirety of cinema now with people from huge franchises. So In the Heart of the Sea isn't about Moby Dick. It's about the story that Melville had heard that inspired him to sort of use the framework for Moby Dick. And this movie features Melville interviewing one of the last survivors of this wrecked vessel. And they're telling it in flashback. And it's not Chris Hemsworth characters. Chris Hemsworth is sort of the anchor point to it, but he's the first mate. And it's told from the point of view of this lowly 14-year-old kid who's started working on this whaling ship. There are some moments that are just gorgeous. There's a lot of the high seas action, even though everything's CGI. I mean, there's a scene where they're like on a farm, literally on the farm where Chris Hemsworth's character lives, and everything around them is CGI. I mean, they shoot this thing against a green screen, just like you would one of the Avengers movies, but it's about a whaling ship. And that bothers me when there's that much digital trickery and that much digital sets just for a movie that takes place in the countryside. Now, when they did movies like Far From the Madding Crowd or any of these sort of period piece movies, they didn't seem to manipulate the background so much as they do in this film. And it gets on my nerves. But once they get on the high sea, and you know there, of course, all the whaling moments are going to be CGI, that stuff's really kind of breathtaking. It's exhilarating. And yeah, I mean, there's certain people who, you know, the animal rights people out there, you're not going to want to see this movie because they are whalers. They are killing whales and bringing them on board and cutting them up for their oil. It's not making a value judgment on it. This is just the backdrop of the story. This is what the characters did. This was their job. You can't have a story about Moby Dick without having whalers in it. So those moments are fantastic. And with the whale attacks are fantastic. And there are a lot of cool stuff happening. The problems it has is everything in between. It has some very slow moments. It drags. And of course, there's shipwreck moments where you got people on basically lifeboats for extended periods. And I'm not a big fan of people on lifeboats anyways. I just don't find them that interesting of a movie. They did that with Unbroken, which technically was last year, but it came out earlier this year to the wide public. That was one of my problems with Unbroken. That is just, it was boring in the lifeboat. I just got to, oh, great. Now I have to sit around and wait for them to starve to death in the lifeboat. So it has some slow moments. But overall, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it probably more than I should have. I think they just dropped it in here because it was an open time slot. I mean, it's going to get crushed next week with Star Wars, but it may get crushed this week with Krampus. Who knows? But I'm still going to say that In the Heart of the Sea kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Don Verdeen. Napoleon Dynamite director Jared Hess gives us this dry and absurd comedy about a biblical archaeologist faking discoveries to keep his career afloat.
What I'm proposing is that we bring more artifacts here.
It would be like a holy land in the good old U.S. of A., where it should be, not over there.
Don, I'm gonna get you to Israel. We need something big, the Holy Grail of artifacts.
And what might that be?
The Holy Grail.
What Al-Qaeda would want with the skull of a Philistine, I have no idea.
They're possibly cloning an army of giant Al-Qaeda guys.
I tend to like Jared Hess's stuff. I thought Napoleon Dynamite was cute and clever, but I really like Gentleman Broncos. I'm that one guy who liked Gentleman Broncos. I know one other critic who did, Chase Whale. And he's the only other one who liked Gentleman Bronco from whoever I've ever heard of. This one feels very much like a Jared Hess movie. It's a very dry, sort of understated delivery with absurd things happening, but very little reaction to them. And it's got a great cast. Sam Rockwell, Amy Ryan, Jemaine Clement. It's a really strong cast. It doesn't hold together as well in terms of story. It doesn't really know where it's going with the story. But it has some great moments to it. It has some very funny moments. If you like that sort of understated humor that isn't meant to rip a laugh from your face, it's there to just let you chuckle inside. I thought it was funny. It's not as much of a hit piece on organized religion as it is people who use the organized religion to try to keep their monetary world afloat, or just people who are fraudsters anyways. It's just happens to be the world that they live in. But it's a silly movie, and it's fun. I enjoyed it. So I'm going to have to say that Don Verdeen kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Big Short and Legend. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr, rolling through the movie reviews. I've got the next film to talk about is The Big Short. Opens in limited release this week. It's an awards contender, so I think it's getting a wider release right at Christmas, but 5 million other movies are opening on Christmas Day, so I won't even get to talk about it then, so let's talk about it now. If you're lucky enough to be near a place that it's open, if not, remember it in your little heads, and think about what I said. The Big Short. A group of workers on Wall Street see the pending mortgage crisis coming in the mid-2000s and try to make a deal to profit from it.
The whole housing market is propped up on these bad loans. They will fail. It's a time bomb.
All the banks were having a big old party. A few outsiders saw what no one else could. The whole world economy might collapse.
I'm sure the world's banks have more incentives than greed.
You're wrong.
No one's paying attention.
The banks got greedy, and we can profit off of their stupidity.
This movie would be a great double feature with Margin Call. I thought Margin Call, which came out 4 or 5 years ago, was a much more cohesive and direct and well-made film about the crisis, the housing crisis and collapse of almost the entire collapse of the global economy in 2008. Mainly because it was a little more intimate. It explained what was going on a little bit better. Part of what this does is it's based on a book that is meant to explain how this guy saw it coming, saw what was going to happen, and then put together a plan to basically sell short on everything and make a lot of money. And that's the biggest stumbling block this movie has, is because it's trying to boil down the entirety of this financial situation so that the average viewer can understand it. It's a lot of inside baseball in Wall Street. And I understand a little bit of it, but I don't understand a lot of it. And it was a lot for me to digest. And director Adam McKay does some really cool things to make it accessible to people. He takes these weird sort of out of context moments. And for example, in one scene, he says, "What does this mean? Well, here's Margot Robbie in a bubble bath to explain it to you." And so it's just this weird way of presenting these things that kind of make him interesting and fun. But they're still, at its heart, it's hard to understand. And there's a reason, because the monetary stuff in Wall Street is pretty complex, and the people who are in the business understand how it all works, but the average person doesn't. And that's part of the reason that a crisis like this happened, is because these trends and ideas and bad loans and sucker mortgages were sold to the American people. And if you knew anything about finances, you'd be like, whoa, that's not a good deal. And you would have seen this coming from the ground level, but most people don't. Most people sign the mortgage and just pay their mortgage and don't think beyond that. And the fact that this movie's at times difficult to digest is the very reason that this movie exists, because it was a bunch of people taking advantage of a system that allowed them to play around with all this sand in the sandbox, and most people don't understand how the sand works. But with that said, once you get past it, it's probably the best delivery you're ever going to get to explain what happened in 2008 and to maybe make you think about what could happen again. Now, what's interesting, I used to do work as a friend of mine is a lawyer, and he would teach continuing education to mortgage brokers, because to keep your license, you have to have so many hours of education about the industry. I ran his AV stuff. I'd run his music and I was basically his tech guy. And we'd do these seminars at the end of the year. And he would run these seminars throughout Ohio. And what had happened, they just recently deregulated the mortgage industry. And you could have mortgage brokers sell these mortgages. And suddenly it exploded. And you had tens of thousands of these guys and women all across the state. And when they realized that it wasn't just this giant windfall for everybody, it corrected itself. But still, you saw a lot of people jumping on this bandwagon. And I saw a lot of skeezy, sleazy people come through the seminars, and I saw a lot of mortgage brokers, and some of them were real good people and sharpshooters, but there were some real skeezy people in there. And I was watching this happen, and I remember talking to some of the people about the mortgages and kind of the things that they were trying to pull and the kind of mortgages that they were trying to sell. So this was probably, what, around 2003? 2004 up to about 2006. So I saw this coming, and as somebody who's a little bit skeptical of certain things, I was like, this is not going to end well. And it didn't. And so I kind of saw this coming too. That's just because I saw the type of characters that were selling these bad loans. And there's a scene in the movie where they've got these two basically mortgage brokers, and they're bragging about how easy it is to sell these mortgages and all this sort of thing. And they're played by these, it's one of the guys is Schmidt from New Girl. And I said to my wife as we're watching, I go, that guy, I worked with those kind of people. I know what they're like. And it was a lot of greed. And this movie presents it extremely well, and it presents a lot of the figures in it. It's very interesting, and it's a great ensemble. It's very hard to understand at times. But I was impressed with this because it's directed by Adam McKay, and Adam McKay's best known for doing movies like Anchorman and Anchorman 2 and The Other Guys. And he takes his sarcastic comedy stylings and puts it in this movie, but it's still an Adam McKay movie. And surprisingly, it works. I'm going to have to say that The Big Short, I was skeptical when I was going into it, but when I finally saw it, I have to say The Big Short rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. There's sort of a theme every Oscar season. There's a theme in this year of characters going up against powerful entities, either trying to convince people that something bad's happening or trying to change the system. You saw that in Spotlight with the reporters going up against the Catholic Church. You saw that in The Big Short with these Wall Street guys going up against the entirety of the banking industry. And you also will see it come Christmas in Concussion, where you have a doctor going up against the NFL. This one's not one of them. We get a break from that kind of movie. We've got Legend. And in this one, Tom Hardy plays both the Cray brothers in this biopic about the London gangsters from the 1960s.
London in the 1960s. Everyone had a story about the Crays. They were twins.
Do you think we look alike?
Reggie was a gangster prince of the East End. Ron Cray was a one-man mob.
Your brother is a violent, paranoid schizophrenic.
It was time for the Crays to enter gangster legend.
Me and my brother, we're going to rule London.
We're going after the Crays.
You won't mind if I fight back, will you?
If The Big Short was a nice companion piece for Margin Call, I think that Legend would be a nice companion piece with The Man from U.N.C.L.E. because it shares that nostalgia of the 60s. It's not as hyper-real as The Man from U.N.C.L.E., but Legend does make the 60s very sexy. And even the crime in the 60s very sexy. And you didn't get this until very recently. It's sort of made in this post-Mad Men world where it does kind of glorify just the existence of the 60s and the style and the music and even just the culture of the 60s and the mentality of the 60s. That weird netherworld between conservative 50s and the completely bonkers psychedelic 70s. So the look of the film is great. The acting's really pretty good. Tom Hardy plays both brothers, and he does a fantastic job in them because he gives them each their own nuance, and there's very little question ever which brother you're looking at on screen, that's not easy to do. Sometimes playing twins can be a real challenge for an actor, and he does a great job with them. You also have Emily Browning. She's all grown up now, but she was in like a series of unfortunate events. She plays the wife of one of the brothers. And I mean, it looks great. It's got a great cast and it's got a real good energy and some really great scenes. It just kind of turns into a pedantic biopic at times. The biggest trouble that I have with biopics is sometimes they just don't have a direct through line of a story. It's sort of this hodgepodge of events for these guys' life. And that's how life is. But that's where the creative process and creative liberties work with scripts and directors. And it doesn't quite fit together as a movie, but, you know, it's kind of a neat film in itself. Still, I'm going to have to say that Legend does kind of suck.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to do a catch-up review of By the Sea. I'll also talk about the box office and the home cinema roundup. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kuykendall Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr, wrapping you up for Fat Guys at the Movies, finalizing the film reviews. Let's talk about By the Sea. I missed this earlier. One of the things that happens at this time of year, pretty much from November through the beginning of January, there's a whole lot of movies that I end up seeing in November and December. And I see them either for award consideration purposes, because I'm in three voting groups, or I'm seeing them because they're just releasing a lot of them and they need to get them out before the end of the year. And they may not open. Some of them may not open until January. I mean, for example, I've seen The Revenant already, which is the Leonardo DiCaprio movie. And we all know the story that came out a couple weeks ago about that movie, which was wrong. But that one doesn't even open until January 9th. I've already seen it. I saw it a couple weeks ago. And I saw it because I'm in these voting organizations and we vote pretty early. And so I'm not going to talk about that until it opens wide, because why bother? Nobody's going to have a chance to go see it. There are a lot of limited releases at this time. Spotlight's a great example. I saw Spotlight. I loved Spotlight. It opened in my hometown way back before Thanksgiving, I think. But it's still sort of working its way out there. And it's done to take advantage of award season. It's getting nominations and it's trucking its way through the theaters around the country. By the Sea was one that I guess technically opened a couple weeks ago. I don't know how much of a release it got. And a part of it, it got terrible reviews. So I think Universal said, okay, let's put the brakes on this one and focus back on Steve Jobs to try and get some more traction with that. But By the Sea is worth talking about just because I feel the need to review it. And you may not be able to find it in theaters anymore. It may have left quickly. It may roll out again, but it's going to be on DVD and video. It might be at your dollar theaters now as we speak or soon afterwards. Anyways, Angelina Jolie directs this film about a couple vacationing on the French seaside in the 1960s as their marriage implodes.
Are we ever going to talk about it?
Nessa?
Do you hate me?
You know my reason.
You want to hurt me?
You're nothing.
Hurt me.
Come on.
It's the perfect day.
I've said this before, I'll say it again. I'm not terribly impressed with Angelina Jolie as a director. Last year, I was kind of unimpressed by Unbroken. I mean, I thought the story was fantastic. The character, and there's great honor I have for the person who actually lived Unbroken, but I just thought her directing of it was kind of soft. And it felt like it was directed by somebody else and she just stamped her name on it. It just didn't feel like it had any oomph to it. It didn't have anything. There's no like stamp on it that you felt like, that was a good movie, well directed. It just sort of felt passable. People liked it at the time and it's a good story, but just kind of came and went. This one, I also feel like she isn't really good at directing. It doesn't make her a bad person. That doesn't make her a bad artist. She's very good at what she would do as a movie star. But directing, and then writing and then directing herself and her husband is sort of this perfect storm of terribleness that you get from this movie. By the Sea looks gorgeous, I will say. I even nominated it at one point for cinematography because it has some beautiful looking shots. And it's gorgeous, the French seaside. We've seen this area in other movies before, but it's just beautiful and it's shot like a perfume ad. It's very elegant. But my God, is it a boring movie. Holy cats, man. And it is also the most narcissistic thing that you're ever going to see. She wrote the story about herself in the lead role, and it's about the woman is a completely narcissistic woman. She's all about how she looks and making sure she has image and elegance. And then it's that same actor playing that role and then directing herself and making herself look as beautiful as possible. And I mean, I was saying this once to one of the critics as we were leaving, and he's like, oh, well, that's kind of the point. It's about a narcissist. And I'm like, yeah, that's sort of like a guy directing a movie and then making out with his lead actress and saying to his wife, oh, I have to. It's this beautiful lead actress, but the character has to make out with her. Now, this is just an excuse for Angelina Jolie to pose and look pretty and look gorgeous. And she looks great. But I wanted the entire seaside to burn down in this movie. I just hated it. It's just such a passion. And Brad Pitt's in it, and he's boring in it as well. Because it's about their marriage, and it's falling apart. And there's a big secret in the past that when it's finally revealed, you're like, that's the secret? That's the most inane, no duh, I've seen this a million times before in a movie, secret that has ever been done. It's crap soap opera writing. And she thinks she's being artistic and brilliant with it. And they're just awful people. And there's no redemption to them, and there's no likability to them. And don't tell me that's the point, because I don't care to spend any time with these people. It's so boring. So boring. I looked up the running time before I went and saw it, and what I read was 2.5 hours, and I was like, oh God. Oh, this is going to be terrible. Fortunately, it was just a little bit over 2 hours. And that was the best part about it, was the fact it ended sooner than I thought it would. So, By the Sea absolutely, totally sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office. Last week, I predicted that Krampus would win the weekend with $30 million. That was a little bit ambitious, I guess you could say. And it didn't even win the weekend. But Krampus did extremely well. Krampus made over $16 million, which is a great opening for a horror movie, just as a horror movie. But a horror movie in December, a lot of times they have these horror movies that come out in the beginning of December. I remember last year they had The Pyramid opened on the same weekend. The Pyramid made $1.4 million. It came in ninth. Krampus did actually extremely well for just a throwaway original non-sequel horror movie. And good for that, because it was a fun movie. I enjoyed it. The Hunger Games ended up winning. Made just under $19 million last weekend. But it really had to fight to win over Krampus, and that's great. The only reason The Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 2 is doing well and winning these weekends is because the last couple weekends just haven't had a terribly strong competitive movie against it. And yeah, it's still doing well. It ended the weekend with $227 million, and it's probably going to go into this weekend with around $250 domestic. And it might win this weekend, but I mean, even with a 50% drop, which is fair, you're still looking at it coming in at under $10 million. In the Heart of the Sea just has to make $10 million to win. And I think it's good for 10 to 15. I'm going to say on record, In the Heart of the Sea is going to win with $12 million. I would love to see Krampus hold and win with like $10 or $11 million. It probably won't. It'll probably be a horse race between Hunger Games and In the Heart of the Sea. The only thing going against In the Heart of the Sea is I don't think it's getting that great of reviews. So the word of mouth might not be well, but we might have a weekend that the winner gets less than $10 million. And then they'll all be just destroyed next week when Star Wars comes out. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. A couple really big releases this week, and it's a 1-2 punch with this week and next week, because we're in the gift buying time. You've got Ant-Man, which is also available on DVD and Blu-ray and in 3D. And actually, I gotta say, I've seen the 3D version, not just in theaters, but the home version of it, and the 3D at home looks really pretty good. It's got some nice special features. It's got some behind-the-scenes stuff, deleted scenes. It's got a commentary, if you're into that. And that makes it a good buy, but it's just a fun movie. This is actually my favorite original single-character Marvel origin story. I know a lot of people loved Iron Man. I thought Iron Man was okay. But, I mean, compare this to, like, even The Incredible Hulk, which I really liked, or Thor or Captain America. This one's a lot of fun. This one clicks. It's essentially just a heist movie. And a bit of a quirky comedy. There's also Minions, which is also available in 3D. I like this more than some people did in terms of critics, but I know it did extremely well. There's also Knock Knock, which stars Keanu Reeves and Eli Roth's film about home invasion and sex. This is not a good movie, but it's probably the best Eli Roth movie he's made since Hostel. Or Hostel 2, I liked Hostel 2. Eli Roth's not a good director. I think he pittered out after Cabin Fever and Hostel. His last couple ones have been kind of lame. This one still shows that he doesn't quite know how to construct the movie, but it's okay for rental. The Transporter Refueled is also available on DVD and Blu-ray. Not a great movie, but if you just kind of are a completist and you need to see all the Transporter movies, probably not going to make another one. There's also some TV. Hannibal Season 3, you can catch the final season of that. And Under the Dome Season 3 as well. That's it for this week. Next week, I'm going to be talking about a little independent film called Star Wars The Force Awakens and Tina Fey and Amy Poehler in the counter-programming Sisters. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.